Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power. And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower, now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
You've probably heard a lot about electrified vehicles lately. Well, Toyota has electrified options for every lifestyle. We've got hybrids, no plug needed.
All right, let's go.
But we also have plug-in hybrids, if that's your thing. You can even go 100% electric in the Toyota BZ4X. With so many options for reducing carbon emissions, Toyota is electrified, diversified. Learn more about our Beyond Zero vision for the future at toyota.com/beyondzero.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X. Makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run, Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
On the Bechdel cast, the questions asked if movies have women in them. Are all their discussions just boyfriends and husbands, or do they have individualism? The patriarchy's effing vast. Start changing it with the Bechdel cast.
Caitlin.
Yes?
Why would you do this? I thought you were my friend. And I was just about to make you some coffee.
Oh, geez. Well, woman, get back in the kitchen. Wait, am I your husband or am I
no,
your
friend
in this scenario?
No, you're my friend who just stabbed me.
I'm your friend. Okay, right. Oh, right.
And I didn't believe.
I just wanted to make you some coffee. Why would you do that?
Truly high comedy. Well, I was going to try. Mm. I should have added the word like a word like podcast into that. There could have been a transformative joke and it didn't come. But this is the Bechdel cast. Here's the thing. I've been switched out with an inferior model, and that's why I did that the way I did.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I love you so much more now.
Thank you so much. I've given up my dreams of being a photographer, and I am wearing a sheer nightie at all times.
She cooks as good as she looks.
Today's episode, I feel like, has been a long time coming. We've been getting this request pretty steadily over the years, so I'm excited to talk about it. This is the Bechdel cast. My name is Jamie Loftus.
My name is Caitlin Durante, and this is our podcast where we examine movies through an intersectional feminist lens using the Bechdel test simply as a jumping off point. And that, what is it even? I don't
oh my God.
Know.
I'm constantly forgetting.
I've been turned into a robot and I don't remember the things I used to know.
Oh my God. The 70s robot is so much scarier than the 2004 robot. I'm just saying the alien eyes. Okay. The Bechdel test is a media metric originally created by queer cartoonist Alison Bechdel, sometimes called the Bechdel-Wallace test, that for the purposes of our show requires that two people of a marginalized gender with names talk to each other I guess we're kind of changing this. They have to talk to each other about not a man. And we're switching it up, aren't we, Caitlin? I mean, that we have, I guess, two different reads, because we used to say for two lines of dialogue, but then we're making a change so that it's like some sort of plot impactful interaction.
Yeah.
So as to get rid of the, like, what would you like for dinner? Cheese. Yes. Like, you know, like non-interactions kind of.
Yeah, I hadn't, that was like something that I was going to pay attention to. Yeah, if we want to implement it for the whole show, I'm down. Yeah.
I feel like it could just be canon, because there's been so many movies over the years that have gotten away with some really like heinous ones that like, and sometimes they're really funny, but I feel like it should at least, like, I don't know, I guess it's kind of the, like, you'll know it when you hear it, like, it doesn't need to be like influencing the next plot point, but it just a meaningful interaction, whatever meaningful means.
Well, what an interesting movie to apply the test to, because arguably the conversations they are having most of the time are about what nefarious plans the men have, and or they're already robots. So if they've already been impacted by the men, can they really have a conversation about anything that isn't related to house cleaning? Yeah.
Let's take this new version for a spin. See how it goes.
Yeah.
Sounds good to me. And with that, let's properly introduce our guest.
Oh, hello.
She is a sex edutainer. She is the owner of Spectrum Boutique and author of Carnal Knowledge. It's Zoe Ligon.
Wee! Hello. Thanks for having me.
Welcome.
I've been so excited to talk about this. Well, these films. I'm a huge horror and thriller fan. And while the 2000s version of this film is hardly spooky, you know, it plays on some very real world fears, you know, that the men in our lives are secretly plotting against us at all times. like,
could be some truth to it. Hard to say. This is also one of the, I would say one of the better Larry. And okay, we're talking about, originally we were going to just talk about the 2004 movie, but then we all watched both. So it's an episode about both.
Yeah.
But I would say that this is one of my top Larry King cameos.
Ooh.
Not on B Larry King in B movie level. I think that's kind of the golden standard for Larry King cameos. Of course. But this was a pretty good one at the end, I thought.
Agree that it's nowhere near his peak, which is, of course, in B movie.
I mean, unbelievable.
We have Christopher Walken.
Yeah, Christopher. I just, so many good.
Bette Midler.
So many good, like, wonderful actors in this 2004 version. And, like, but they're just, like, they're not given very, very much.
No, they are not.
Well, Zoe, what is your history with the Stepford Wives, just overall, any of the movies interacting with the property in general?
Absolutely. I watched the 2004 movie probably right when it came out. I then was such a fan that I owned it on DVD, watched it many times.
Wow.
I was so excited to rewatch it for this podcast because I knew it was going to be one of those films that was like deeply embedded in my psyche. And it was exactly as I expected. There was like little moments that like I like unlocked parts of my memory.
Oh,
like especially the do-si-do scene where she's twirling out of control. I was just like, oh, I'll never forget this part.
Oh my God.
I hadn't seen the 75 version and decided to watch it the night before I watched the 2004 version. And I am so glad I did, because what a different film. I mean, same premise. I mean, the main difference between a comedy and a horror is people living versus people dying. So, you know, very different outcomes, similar premise. And now I want to read the book.
Yeah.
I haven't read it.
Same.
Yeah.
Same.
This is the second adapted, I mean, like really famous adapted property from this author, because this is the same author as Rosemary's Baby.
Oh, which that we've covered. Yeah.
We covered a couple of years ago. Ira Levin. So kind of an iconic writer who very often wrote about the expectations of women. So there you go. Yeah. Caitlin, what's your history with the Stepford Wives?
I saw the 2004 movie at a drive-in movie theater in 2004,
when
it came out.
This is a good drive-in movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had just graduated high school because it came out June 2004. So I think I probably like went with either some friends or my mom. Who knows? But I saw it at the drive-in, and I think that was the only time I had ever seen it, and I had not seen the 1975 version, but I did watch it the other night, so I'm fully prepped to Talk about, there's just, oh my gosh, there's so much to cover. Jamie.
It really is.
What, yeah, what about you?
Mine, I think, kind of similar. I remember watching the 2004 one at a sleepover shortly after it came out.
Good sleepover movie.
Yeah, yeah, and really liking it. And I remember being like, oh, it's like, I don't know, being like young enough that I was like, oh, it's Inspector Gadget and Cruella de Vil and the lady from Moulin Rouge. And oh, I remember my aunt being like, Faith Hill in a movie, because she, people really, if this was the 2004 one was a fun rewatch for the high volume of 2004 themed jokes in it, like a Viggo Mortensen joke.
Orlando Bloom.
Orlando Bloom. Meredith Vieira has a really strong cameo, like early 2000s reality shows. Just a kind of a lot of stuff I did that felt was like normal at the time that I'm like, ooh, this is dated. I'm really getting old. And then I saw the 70s one over the summer. I kind of just like watched it on a whim and like really, really, really liked it. Yeah. And it was like, it was fun to go back and watch again because I feel like it, I don't know, it's the strengths that these adaptations have are very different, where it's like, it feels like the 2004 one, the pacing of it and the look of it, it's like it keeps it moving. It goes quick. The 70s one can drag a little bit. But then, I mean, I'm very excited to talk about how... the 2004 one got studio notes'd into saying nothing by the end, like I honestly
so many
forgot.
Twists
I forgot how the 2004 one ended. Same. so differently. I was like, damn, they really thought they were doing something there. That's wild. And I should read the book, but I simply
We don't read books on this podcast. We've said it before. We'll say it again.
I almost reread The Da Vinci Code, but it wasn't it wasn't available at the library, in my defense.
You're too busy with your rhinestone swordfish.
My rhinestone swordfish is killing me. Like, I'm so late on so many things, but I have, you know, I have like 2 hours left of my rhinestone swordfish and then I can move on with my life.
Yes.
So what I've done for this is I'll recap the 2004 one, but I feel like then we can just go into, in our discussion, we can just like note the differences and similarities and stuff like that.
I love that.
That's my plan. Okay, so the 2004 adaptation of Stepford Wives opens on Joanna Eberhardt. That's Nicole Kidman. She's the president of a TV network.
She's literally dressed like Elizabeth Holmes. It's like
girl boss.
Wild. She's in full girl boss mode.
She's at an awards show presenting a few like popular reality shows that she has worked on. But everything goes haywire when a man who had been screwed over by one
Mitch
of her
Neely.
Programs. Yes.
I Can Do Better is the name of the reality show.
I can't believe they made Ned Schneebly the assassin. What a move.
What a plot line to just throw in there.
Really? Because what happens is that he shows up and tries to shoot Joanna and had also shot his wife and several of her lovers
that she met on the reality. And it's like all of Joanna's reality shows are very early 2000s in that they're like, the theme is a very rigid gender binary. And that's the whole show.
But the movie wants you to think like, oh, look how empowering these shows are for women. But it's like by early 2000s standards.
Definitely.
So
see, I wasn't even sure. Like, there was so many moments in this movie where I was like, is this like, I know that they, is it satire to them or is it, am I supposed to, like, it's so tonally confusing because it like looks like a satire. Everything's so over the top and how it's stylized and presented. But then like most of the story doesn't, it's so confusing because I was like, oh, they're like, you know, parodying this era of reality TV at an 11. But like, I didn't understand what my takeaway was supposed to be.
Right. So basically the network not wanting to be associated with Joanna any longer, they fire her. Mm-hmm. And being fired gives her a nervous breakdown. and her husband, Walter Cresby, played by Matthew Broderick, mm-hmm. comes to visit her in the hospital, and she tells him that she wants to get away and start over. So Joanna, Walter, and their two kids move to Stepford, Connecticut, which is this extremely wealthy, extremely white, gated community. They arrive and are greeted by Claire Wellington, played by Glenn Close. She shows them around the neighborhood, and she points out the Men's Association, which is this like giant country club type place where the men of the community hang out. Mm-hmm. And then she says that the women slash wives of the community hang out in this day spa. So Joanna meets all of them, and they are all rocking this like 1950s housewife aesthetic. Mm. They're creepy, they're weird, except for one woman who she meets, who appears to be normal, Bobby Markowitz, and her husband, Dave, played by John Lovitz, and
so
John,
weird.
John, very weird. John.
2004.
Makes me think of high school high.
And then they also meet a gay couple, Jerry and Roger, and Joanna and Bobby befriend Roger. Mm-hmm. But then something happens at this 4th of July party where one of the wives, Sarah Sunderson, that's Faith Hill, right? I think.
Yes. Yeah.
I could not pick Faith Hill out of a lineup to save my life.
All right. That's kind of her thing. my aunt was obsessed with Faith Hill, so I've got the radar.
Got it. So Sarah Sunderson, she can't stop spinning around. This
do-si-do.
Is like the whole like do-si-do.
Yep.
And it's almost as if she's a robot who's malfunctioning.
That was another thing that like struck me about the 2004 one. They give it away so early.
They really do.
Mm-hmm. There's no mystery to it at all.
No,
like,
dread.
You find out in the first scene. You're like, oh, yeah, Faith Hill's clearly a robot. So,
I have a theory about that. So, yeah, the main narrative device in the 2004 one is suspense, whereas the 1975 one is mystery. And for any listeners out there who are like, what's the difference? Basically, suspense is when the audience knows more than the characters, and mystery is when the characters and audience know the same amount of amount of information.
I love that distinction.
Thank you so much. I teach screenwriting classes anyway.
I just think that it fails in this one. It's so
well, my theory for that is that because Stepford Wives as a concept was already so familiar to everyone, there's no point in trying to like make it a mystery in this movie by 2004.
Even as a tween, I knew what I was signing up for going into it.
Right. So they were like, well, let's just do it suspense because everyone already has a general idea of what a Stepford wife is. Mm-hmm. So that's, I'm guessing, why they did that. But anyway, so Mike Wellington, a.k.a. Christopher Walken, shows up and he fixes Sarah Sunderson. but Joanna is like, what the fuck?
She's also wearing like all black to this like 4th of July party that's covered in pastels. And she's like wearing like a cocktail dress that's black.
Right.
I do love it.
And then Joanna's husband, Walter, gaslights her and makes her think that everything's fine and that she has to change herself and fit into this community. Mm. So Joanna starts wearing pastels and doing household chores. And then she, Bobby, and Roger go to visit Sarah Sunderson to see if she's all right. Mm-hmm. And they find what is clearly a remote control that controls Sarah.
I would love to have one of these just like a replica prop at my
home. That would be such a good one.
The golden remote. It's a good prop.
It is. Yeah. But they're toying around with it, and we see like Sarah being controlled by it in the background, but they are not privy to what's happening, so they still don't know. It's still suspense. Meanwhile, Walter does learn what's going on, which is that the Stepford women are robots, but we find out that that's not even true, that they've just been like nano-chipped in their brain.
Way more friendly too, because you know there is no death and murder occurring. It's like, oh, we've just modified your brain. This is a comedy now.
Right. Because in the book and in the 70s version, the wives are being murdered and then replaced with lookalike.
And like androids that only have like huge pupils for eyes. They're so scary.
Yeah. But anyway, so the Stepford women or Stepford wives are being turned into these like perfect little housewives that look hot and wait on the men hand and foot. So Joanna and Bobby, they know something strange is going on, so they sneak into the men's association to investigate, but they get caught and have to run away. But then it seems that Roger, their friend Roger, has gotten the like Stepford treatment because he's suddenly completely different. He's running for political office now, even though he's an architect.
He's a he's suddenly a Republican.
To appease his husband, yes. Yeah. What his husband wanted from him all along, and another Republican husband.
Oh, God, so scary.
And then Joanna is like, that's it, Walter, we're leaving. And he's like, okay, we'll leave tomorrow. And that night, Joanna finds the remote control with her name on it. And so she starts to do some research, and she discovers that all of these Stepford women were formerly powerful career women. They were CEOs, they were judges, there were a bunch of girl bosses. But obviously they are completely different persona-wise, looks-wise, etc., from who they are now. So Joanna goes to warn Bobby, but oh no, they've already gotten to Bobby.
Yeah, Bobby's portrayed as like borderline hoarder when we first meet Bobby to really emphasize the dichotomy. I mean, you know, not that bad, but there's this dramatic scene of like, oh, where's the floor? I can't see the floor.
It looks like she's like a freshman in college.
More like a freshman in college.
Yeah.
So the next thing that Joanna knows, she is surrounded by all the men, and Walter's like, I'm tired of you being better than me at everything. And then Mike Wellington, Christopher Walken, explains the whole process where they take the women, they insert nanochips into their brains and program them to be these complacent trophy wife women. They then do the process to Joanna and turn her into a Stepford wife, or so we think.
This is where it's like, what is going on? That scene where it's like, we'll get there. I was so frustrated by the end of this movie.
Yes.
Oh yeah. But then Walter, I guess, realizes the error of his ways or something.
They make out. They kiss. And which like upsets me because I'm like, oh, you just learned your husband wants to make you a robot and you just go kiss him.
Right.
But this is what wakes him up. And he's like, oh, I shouldn't have done. Like all of a sudden it's like, wait a minute. I love my wife.
But
like but it's like, when they're sinking into the floor, we have to think that Joanna does think she's about to be turned into a robot.
Yes,
there's correct. It's not like they telepathically communicated and he's like, actually, I'm not. It's like,
Jamie, a kiss is telepathic communication. Come on.
If it's true love between a husband and wife, of course. Exactly. It's like, oh my God. I was like, how is she not breaking up with him? He was so ready to turn her into a robot.
Yeah.
Like, so
why
fast.
Why isn't she running away?
No consequences here.
Right. Oh, there's so much to talk about there. But anyway, so there's this big ball that happens, and Walter sneaks away and hacks into the mainframe and starts reversing all of these Stepford programming in the women's brains. And it turns out that Joanna had not actually been transformed into a Stepford wife. She was just faking it to, I guess, create a diversion. And then Mike Wellington is like, Walter, you suck. And he goes to attack him. But then Joanna hits Mike and knocks
him. This is iconic.
This is amazing. she knocks Mike Wellington, Christopher Walken's head off, because it turns out he's a robot.
Dun, dun, dun.
This twist was more fun. This was, like, more fun. Yeah.
This yes. is a fun moment.
Yeah.
So it turns out that Claire Wellington had programmed her robot husband, Mike, to do her bidding. The whole Stepford wife thing was her idea. She, like, explains her master plan and her motivations and stuff.
It mostly makes sense, kind of.
It ba- oh,
how
oh
she God, how she managed to get away with a double homicide and then take over a small town is just, we don't know. We don't know.
I mean, you have to hand it to her.
Suspension of disbelief.
Women are right. powerful, and I have proof.
Feminist icon, when you think about it. Then she accidentally electrocutes herself to death, I think, by kissing Christopher Walken's robot head.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, the disembodied head, yes.
This is hilarious.
Then we cut to 6 months later, where Joanna, Bobby, and Roger are guests on Larry King.
Otherwise known as B. Larry King.
B. Larry King. They've done this whole, like, expose about the Stepford community. And then we cut to the men of Stepford now doing all of the domestic chores because they're, like, under house arrest. And then now they're the ones who go grocery shopping. The end. Oh, let's take a quick break, and then we'll come back to discuss.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. When Dr. Sabah and I decided to do a skincare line together, he said to me, we are going to give women meaningful beauty. And I said, that's exactly right. We want to give women meaningful beauty, which means each and every product is meaningful. It has a reason to exist. It's efficacious. You're going to get results. And then you just go out and live your life.
Meaningful beauty. Confidence is beautiful. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.
And we're back.
We're back.
Should we go over just kind of like some of the broader differences between the two movies before we kind of jump in? Because
yeah.
Caitlin, you like broke down perfectly how the genres are different.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And how it's, you know, unless you had read the book, you know, you would go into the 1975 movie not knowing that the women is robots now.
Right.
And so it really like builds that tension throughout of like, well, what is going on here? But I really like what I liked so much more about the 1975 one is that you get to like know the people who live there in a
Definitely.
Meaningful way. And mm-hmm. so it just like, I think that's like the main, that and the way that it ends is like, oh, this is clearly satire. This is clearly saying something. Because at the end of the 75 movie, There is no secret. Walter was good the whole time. She's turned into a Stepford wife. That's how it ends. She's murdered by her alien double, which is super fucking scary. And she becomes a Stepford wife. And it is like this, you know, commentary on womanhood at this time. And there's, you know, it certainly has its flaws, but at least it's like there's a clear point. I feel like you got a lot more out of the Joanna Bobby friendship in the 75 one as well, because they are like actively investigating what's going on for the whole, like they like try to start a women's club and they and I also thought that Joanna's, I don't know, I'm curious what you both think here. I thought that Joanna's job situation made more sense to me in the 75 one as well. Like I think it's funny that they chose for her to be a high powered reality show producer in the 2004 one, but it doesn't really come in anywhere. Like where in the 70s one, Joanna is an aspiring photographer.
Yeah.
And it felt to me kind of like she was not yet successful. She's kind of negged by her husband for having this dream. She's insecure about it. And it's like a part of her character, and then she like gets closer to her goals, and the closer she gets to her goals, the more her husband resents it, and like it just has like an active part of the story.
I mean, there weren't as many women CEOs in 1975 also. I think you're 100% right that it's a sign of the times and how it was portrayed.
The other thing is, the one thing I do like about the 2004 version, which as you would expect from a movie made in 2004, doesn't get this quite right or go all the way. But the 2004 version focuses more on like the commentary being made, because both movies are providing commentary to varying degrees of, you know, efficacy and success. But the 2004 version focuses on male fragility and like comments on male fragility in terms of like the men feel inferior to and emasculated by their powerful wives. So they basically turn the women into these complacent trophy wife like domestic robots with no personality and no autonomy, so that they can feel superior again. And that's like a very real thing, because, you know, the patriarchy conditions men to think that they should be like superior, and if they like, if they make less money or if they don't have as impressive or powerful as a job, then they are inferior to, you know, the women in their lives. So
There's a power imbalance in the 2004 one that doesn't exist in the 70s version.
And I think that's like an interesting and worthwhile thing to comment on, but again, like the 2004 one makes a bunch of other really weird choices that make this like not the most effective commentary.
I felt with like on this rewatch, I felt I was kind of bummed. I left like not liking the 2004 one as much as I feel like I poked a little my little nostalgia balloon for it, because it's just I feel like we really don't know that much about any of the characters, to the point where it's like, even when they're making those like really, you know, clear points about like, you know, Walter feels emasculated and like all this other stuff, it just the pacing of how we got there felt really strange. Like the way the characters reacted to things was like just kind of I don't know, it felt off, where Joanna, you know, Walter is like, I need you to completely change who you are. And Joanna, who we're led to believe is this like really headstrong person, is like, oh my God, you're right. Okay. And then all of a sudden, like Walter flips to supervillain really quickly. And it's like, I just wish I knew a little more about both of them to understand like how that happened. It just felt like, I don't know, even though it's, it makes sense that you need to update the roles and try, you know, try to like reflect where gender roles were at in the year the movie's being made. Like, of course it should be different from the 70s one, but it just felt like, I don't know, like things just happened so like clunkily. When he was, were either of you thrown off when Matthew Broderick was like, you can't wear black anymore, and then she's like, okay, I guess I'm never gonna wear black again. I'm like, this isn't who I was told this character was. Like, what is this?
He says, only high-powered, neurotic, castrating Manhattan career bitches wear black. is that what you want to be? And she says, ever since I was a little girl.
Yep.
Which is funny.
I'm like, okay, that's like girl boss canon. Okay. That's horrific. But also it's like, who fuck? Like it's, I don't know. It seems like, and I guess reading about the production of the 2004 one, it seems like Frank Oz, who also this movie was directed by Yoda.
The Dark Crystal.
It seems like he really wanted to go full satire. In mm-hmm. lines like that, you're like, okay, that's like where the full satire is. But then mm-hmm. it scholarly journal Wikipedia indicates that Paramount was like really not okay with the level of satire he wanted to do and the level of over the toppiness, and so they made him change the entire ending, which kind of undercuts everything. And I bet that there's like a funny satirical movie that was like shot, but it just like was not released.
Got edited. Yeah, ended up on the chopping floor.
Yeah.
Whatever. Just a bummer, because it's like there's a ton of like potential. I would like to understand their relationship a little better, because it ended up kind of like, I don't know. I liked that scene where Walter was like, I feel emasculated and threatened by you. And I liked that Joanna in that scene didn't apologize. And she was like, yeah, like, you're really lucky to be married to me. Yeah,
you're lucky. And I am better at sex. And I was not going to deny
that.
Yeah,
that's a line I remember from the original watching as well.
Like, that's so funny. I just wish I understood more about their relation, or their relationship made more sense to me. I don't know. Because, like,
yeah, how could the husband turn on, you know, it's like, if we're going to believe, okay, like, he could turn on her in this instant, like, I want to know more context for what that relationship was like. If they have kids together, clearly they've been together a few years at least. And
they also disappear their children in this one.
Oh my gosh.
I was like, yeah. Why did you even bother having them?
But also, like, Walter, it doesn't make sense, because he leaves his also very high powered job as a TV network vice president.
Right.
He's just like one step below her. Also, if he leaves that job, how do they afford living in this mansion? But anyway, like, why would
maybe they got good severance after Ned Schneebly came after them.
But if his whole thing was like, I want to be more powerful than my wife, like, wouldn't he keep his powerful? Anyway, more importantly, I think the problem here is that in the 2004 version, which I didn't see in the 1975 version, was that Joanna's character is so wildly inconsistent.
Yeah.
In the 2004 version, because like, first she gets fired, and then she's like, maybe the man who tried to shoot me was right. Maybe I've become the wrong kind of woman. And it's just like, okay, well, like, there's nothing wrong with self-reflection, but like, for you to be like, the man who shot me, he was right, is confusing.
She's unbothered right after it happened as well.
Yeah.
Completely unbothered.
Yeah.
Two minutes after, she's like, oh my God, I'm totally fine.
I'm
like,
fine.
What is going on?
Like, you need to sit down, honey.
It's like, capitalism has enshrouded me in a bulletproof vest of money. Like, it's so, I thought that maybe what my guess was of what they were going for was that, like, she's a very high powered executive, but she also has this deep insecurity, which is like, that's worth exploring.
Sure.
But it doesn't come through, and it does come out as like inconsistent.
Right. Because the next thing is that they arrive in Stepford. She like right away notices that things are weird, especially with the women. But Walter's like, no, things are actually really normal. And like, part of this is like, I don't want to fault her, because she's very clearly being gaslit by her husband. Mm. But she just keeps kind of flip-flopping, where like,
yeah,
then she's like, okay, you're right, I'm a mess, I'm going to start, you know, wearing pink and doing and like baking cupcakes. But then a few scenes later, she's like, no, wait, things are really weird. And then a few scenes later, she's like, no, I'm going to join the book club. And then a few scenes later, she's like, no, I should investigate. Like, it's just like, she's just going on this like loop of doing 180s all the time.
Yeah.
But in the 1975 version, the Joanna character is like consistently like, something is really fucked up about this community. She doesn't like ever waver from trying to figure out what's going on, or like thinking that something is amiss. So I think it's just like kind of a poor writing choice to make Joanna so inconsistent.
I agree. Even though it's like, I mean, in the 70s when we're clearly in, you know, second wave feminism, and there are so many elements of it that are kind of dated, but I just liked her journey a little more, because it was, even though there are moments in the 1970s one where she does kind of try to appease her husband. She's like, I'm sorry. Like, I did, but it makes sense in context, at least. Mm-hmm. Like, it doesn't seem like she's just like doing a 180 for no reason. It's like, oh, she feels guilty because her husband is telling her she should feel guilty. And like, just kind mm-hmm. of this, like, the subtle negging that takes place in their relationship over time, I thought was like pretty effective and like more realistic than you know how the 2004 characters interact with each other.
The 75 one, it's also set up in such a way where Walter was plotting all along to have her turned into a robot. Right. There's this revelation in the 75 one that he'd already put a down payment on the house before she had even signed off on the house. And she mm-hmm. brings that up as, you know, their dirty laundry that they've clearly, you know, been having arguments about. But mm-hmm. it's very clear that he was pulling strings to influence her to move out to Stepford. Whereas in the 2004 one, it seems like, you know, there was no ulterior motive all along. And they just stumble into this world of robots instead of like, I'm going to blackmail my wife and convince her to move out to the country.
Yeah.
And also, we don't really have any context as to why they leave New York in the 75 one. We see this scene in the beginning of the 75 one where they're loading into the car. Some random person is carrying a mannequin around in New York City. And one of the kids goes like, I just saw a guy carrying a naked lady, daddy, or something like that. And one of them goes, yep, that's why we're moving to Stepford. So we don't have to see that anymore. Like, it's like the depravity of New York is what has scared them away into the safe suburbs almost.
Yeah, I kind of was wondering. I was like, I sort of assumed that that was like a commentary of the time of like the suburban culture of the 70s and like the ways that people would like the reasons people would have for justifying a move like that. And even it's like, it's interesting to watch Joanna kind of slowly be like, I didn't want, or she's kind of right away like, I don't really want to be here. And like, mm-hmm. I can't pursue my dreams the way I want to here. And he's kind of like, no, you did. This was like basically your idea. And this is a good idea. And you can take pictures wherever. So like, shut up and go to bed.
Yeah, we can make a dark room for you. Like,
right. And like, it's, I don't know. I thought that, I mean, the 1975 one is like a William Goldman script. So it's like also, I think, just in the hands of a really iconic and capable writer. But like, the deterioration of their relationship is more trackable. I don't understand why she's married to him, but I never understand
why
straight couples are married. So it's like, that's kind of a wash. But in the 2004 one, I totally agree, Zoe. It's like, the fact that Walter is not clued in from the beginning kind of like makes his character really confusing. Like, I don't know. It just,
they go from playing battle bots in the men's club. They literally have these battle bot robots.
Yeah.
And then directly following that, again, in the 2004 one, another one of the guys like, hey, let me show you a party trick. Hey, wife, come on over here. And then we have the infamous scene that is what stands out in my mind the most from my original viewing is inserting a credit card into the wife's mouth or a debit card, you know, and withdrawing cash. All of a sudden, all the men look to Walter to like see how he's going to react, because this is the big reveal. Like, look, our wives are robots. Which also makes no sense with the fact that they're not really robots. They just have chips in their brain.
Correct.
So how is she an ATM? But so then there, after a long pregnant pause, he goes, she gives singles. And then everyone like, you know, bursts into laughter because, oh, thank God he's one of the boys and he gets it. You know?
And then with him, they give him this redemption arc, because even though he's been, gaslighting and just awful to Joanna throughout the whole movie, in both movies, but I'm talking specifically about the 2004 version.
Yeah.
He, again, we touched on this, but so weird that Joanna is just like willingly going to go down into like whatever the lab where she is going to be turned into a Stepford wife. She's just like, well, I kissed my husband and I guess now IDK. She just, yeah. So for her to like, again, so much, that's another part of like the inconsistency of her character, right? Where like, she's going like, oh, something's weird. Actually, no, I should assimilate. And then to the point where she's like, all right, I'm going to go down here and get turned into a Stepford wife, whatever. She's
like, I guess I accept my fate. I'm like, why? Yeah. And then at the end where she goes, I forget what the exchange is, but it's so corny. And like Nicole Kidman's like, that's a man. Talking about how her husband did not turn her into a robot. I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah, because he's a real man. Yeah.
What is this yardstick we're using? What a disaster.
Yeah, this is okay.
The bar is set so low for our husbands now.
It's subterranean. It's in the robot basement is where the bar is.
That made me furious because I don't like it, but I understand why this choice was made from like a screenwriting point of view, where like they need the reveal that Joanna isn't actually a Stepford wife. She was just faking it. But what that does is it gives Walter the opportunity to like basically redeem himself, and then like it just gives him more agency because he's the one going around and like liberating all of the women while Joanna's just kind of like sidelined. And then like you said, like it gives, he's like, I didn't marry someone or something from Radio Shack. And then Christopher Walken goes like, oh, that's a shame. And then Nicole Kidman's like, no, that's a man.
You're like, duh, why'd you make her say then, that?
But yeah, the movie wants you to be like, wow, feminist icon Walter, what a hero. And we're like, no, like, why is he getting this redemption arc? He's a piece of shit.
It's so... like, it's, I don't even super mind, because it's like we're going into this, the 2000s one, with like a cultural understanding of what a Stepford wife is. We need to like find a new way to like, the reveal can't be that they're robots, because we know that if we go to see the movie. But this choice specifically is like, oh my God, like the early 2000s was such a I feel like, as a lot of media is coming out right now, the late 90s and early 2000s was such a horrible time for really like any marginalized group. But it's like stuff like this that I'm like, wow, we were like 30 years prior, there was so much more productive discussion in this same story about, you know, gender role expectations.
Equal Rights Amendment was happening right then. The book was written in 72. And, you know, I don't know when the 75 one was filmed. But, you know, there was this discussion and like revival of the Equal Rights Amendment for the first time since the 20s. And, you know, here we are. And there really hasn't been any revisitation of the Equal Rights Amendment up until the Harvey Weinstein Me Too era. So it's almost like in the early 2000s, there was this idea that we were so much further ahead than we really were, I think.
It's interesting because it's like so we've covered these two Ira Levin adaptations, and it's his, I really I don't know anything about him personally. I hope he's not horrible. He's dead. But in terms of like these two stories, I do think his approach is pretty consistent in that he writes these stories that are, that make pretty sharp commentary about the expectations of women in this time. And also in his stories, the women normally lose. They like fight valiantly against the oppressive patriarchal force. And in both stories, they fail.
Yeah.
And it's, and we like had this discussion a couple of years ago on the Rosemary's Baby episode where it's like, we were like, well, what does that mean? And it's like, I think it just kind of unfortunately was like a reflection of a lot of efforts for equality. And like, it's not that, you know, Rosemary or Joanna were not capable, and it wasn't that they were like, you know, not intelligent or able to figure out what was going on. It was that,
it's a great point,
in both of those stories, even when they figure out what's going on, they just have that knowledge and then they're crushed by the opposing force anyways, mm-hmm. which is like really bleak, but it feels like a more like it's just saying something. Whereas right. like this update of the story is like saying what? I don't know.
Here's what it's saying. It's saying that because what happens is Claire Wellington becomes the villainous mastermind of this project, and her motivation, she explains her motivation, and it's that
and you're like, huh?
my husband cheated on me with a younger woman, so I had to kill them, and then I had to punish every woman I've ever met ever since then.
I liked this better when it was Velma Kelly in Chicago.
That. I mean, and I see what they're trying to do. If I want to give them credit and be like, oh, what's this commentary saying? It's like, yes, women can be a huge opposing force, you know, against the liberation of, and feminism, etc. So totally. But just like such poor execution if that was indeed the intended takeaway.
Right.
Yeah. Or like, even like story-wise, like I honestly, it's like corny and it's not really accomplishing what it's trying to. But like the Glenn Close reveal at the end, I'm like, fine, sure. Like it kind of reminded me of like the, Caitlin, what's the like the cabin in the woods reveal at the end where you're like, it was this woman the whole time. Isn't it Sigourney Weaver at the end of Cabin in the Woods where she's like, I'm the bad, I'm the spy. And you're like, all right, I guess. Like it's not, it's Glenn Close and she's clutching, you know, Christopher Walken's like decapitated head, like
android head, exposed wires sparking, which makes no sense again, if it's brain chips, like,
yes,
right.
How does any of this happen? Again, got to suspend your disbelief here.
Yeah.
It's so, I just wish like even story wise there, unless I truly was like watching this at 0%, like I didn't feel like there were really many clues given that it just come for me. It came like
out of
nowhere. I was like, what? Like there's no foreshadowing for that twist, which you would think the movie would benefit from.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Ay, ay, ay.
But yeah, like Zoe, you were saying, there are women who are very much a part of like upholding rigid gender roles and like patriarchal standards. Like that is unfortunately something that still happens. But I don't think this movie is even trying to comment on that, or if it is, it doesn't know how.
No, because like Joanna's doing the same thing with her fucking girl boss act.
It's
so
true.
Like,
it's like inadvertent messaging, perhaps.
Well, it's that thing that we always talk about where like there have been a bunch of movies written by men that show women being just like really petty and jealous and in competition and like catty toward each other, but they don't take us like even step one to examine why that might be, and they're just like, well, women are petty, so obviously they hate each other. It's the same kind of thing where like, and I mean, I don't even know enough about this, about like why certain people, you know, just have ideologies or like vote in certain ways that are in direct opposition of their own self-interest. Mm-hmm. Like that's a very complicated issue. I have theories about why, but like,
it's a lot of factors involved. Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of things. But this movie only goes so far as to say, well, Claire Wellington loves romance and beauty and chiffon, and her husband cheated on her.
Aesthetic.
So, so now she just wants to turn every woman into a beautiful robot lady who will never misbehave.
Like it's a very like, I was like, we should have put this justification through a few more drafts, like, because it's if we have to get to Glenn Close is the big bad at like, and we have this like woman who's working against the interests of other women, fine, but it's like, well, just come up with a different story. That was such a weak justification, but I guess she dies 2 seconds later. I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. It's so, this movie is so like campy and fun.
Yes,
and then
definitely
it,
campy.
But then plot wise, it's so boring and confusing. It doesn't make sense. It's a very, bizarre movie.
I did appreciate that Glenn Close's character says that she created Robot Mike, because she says that she, here's what it is. She kills real life, like her husband and like her husband's mistress or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then she does create a robot because she was like an engineer and brain surgeon or something like that in the former world.
All high power CEOs and surgeons. Yeah.
another girl boss, I guess. But another also like vilifying a woman in STEM. But so she creates a robot version of her husband. So I think he's the only one who's like a real robot except for the ATM lady. I don't know. It's confusing.
Or boob inflation lady.
Oh, yeah.
Because is it Faith?
Yeah, I think it's Faith. Like
when they find her remote, they like play around with the buttons, and in the background, they're not able to see this, but Faith's boobs are like inflating and deflating, and she's like being controlled by it.
I think my impression was that they were all robot. Like it not all the men, because they're like, oh, the men are next. But yeah, he's like the one male robot. All the women are becoming robots, and then she's gonna.
But
do it to the men. I mean, it doesn't make sense. And like, it just, this, I guess, like, I kind of struggle to understand where the 2000s movie lands on women in position of powers in the end. Like, is it just, again, a theme that's really inconsistent? Because it's like, oh, well, everyone in the movie seems to agree that neutralizing a powerful woman's brain is bad, but it's also implied that Joanna being really into her job was bad, and it's implied that, or it's like, I mean, the Glenn Close's character clearly feels, and there's no time to challenge it because then the movie is over, that her being too invested in her career led her to murder somebody, which is something that happens to Glenn Close in movies all the time.
Yes.
I feel so for her so much. She's like just thrust into the fatal attraction shit all the time.
For sure. Yeah, it is super confusing about like, are these women just like humans who have been nano-chipped? Because when like Matthew Broderick's character liberates them at the end, they seem to like go back to their human cell.
Like the technology disengages all of a sudden, which is why, you know, it can't be both. So I don't know.
Right. Confusing. So it's like, what is it, movie?
Are you full robot or part robot? I don't know.
But I did appreciate when Claire Wellington is like explaining her whole master plan. She's like, well, then I created my robot husband, Mike, because I needed a man that other men would listen to. And it's like, fair.
Yes.
Yeah, true.
That reminds me of that story with Penelope Gazin from like 5 or so years ago when she was starting her clothing when she was working on a project called Witchsea, which is like a shopping site. Mm-hmm. Like as an experiment, she and her business partner, and I might be butchering this anecdote, but she and her business partner like did an experiment where they answered some vendors as themselves and others with this fake male CEO they made up, and the responsiveness that they got to the, I think like they would just sign their emails Ken, and the way people would talk to them was like 100% different. They got way better results, and they're like, thank God for Ken, because
I mean, as a CEO myself, I can't tell you how many emails I get that begin, dear sir,
God,
all the time, you know, and it'll be like a mass email, but it's always dear sir, you know.
Oh my gosh.
Yep. Or people, you know, people make all kinds of assumptions about me as a CEO, like, you know, people think, oh, you know, I must have a money man, or oh, like who's the guy who made this happen, you know. It's wild, all the assumptions people make about you.
It's so frustrating.
There was that other story. There's this story that came out where like a man and a woman had the same job at the same company, but people were always getting frustrated with the woman because she didn't seem to be as efficient as her like male counterpart. And then they like looked into why this was, and it was because her correspondence with people, because people like were like, oh, I'm dealing with a woman, so I have to like, I don't trust her that she's like saying the right thing, or like, so there was just so much more like back and forth. Whereas
that's interesting.
When the man was corresponding with people were just inclined to be like, all right, if that's what you say, then okay. He was able to be more efficient in his job.
That's not even, God, I hate that there's so many examples of this, that it's just a provable track record. Mm-hmm. Well, that so okay. Good points for what's her name? Beef Wellington for that.
Right
for that,
but
point.
But that's almost just like a throwaway line. Anyway, let's take a quick break and then we'll come back for more discussion.
As we wave goodbye to winter's chill, it's time to give our lawn a little love and embrace the freshness of spring. And guess what? The Home Depot's Spring Black Friday sale is here to make it all a breeze. Snag the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for just $89 and say goodbye to tedious yard work. With a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power, your lawn will look spotless in a flash. And the best part? Thanks to the convenience of online shopping, you can effortlessly place your order via the app, cruise into the store for pickup, and find yourself chilling in your freshly spruced up yard in no time. Don't let this awesome deal blow away. Get your hands on the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower for only $89. Yeah, just $89. Exclusively during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but like I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
Is your underwear in need of a refresh? Meet Tomboy X. Makers of the original boxer briefs for women, queer-founded and queer-run, Tomboy X designs sustainable, gender-inclusive underwear and apparel in sizes 3 extra small to 6 extra large. Use code IHEART at checkout for 20% off your first purchase only at TomboyX.com. Shop now on TomboyX.com.
And we're back.
I really want to talk about the inclusion of a gay couple in the 2004 one.
Which there is not in the 70s. It's Tina Louise in the 70s.
Yeah. Again, while I have not read the book, I was researching the differences between the book and the movie. And the book actually has a plot point that was left out of the 70s rendition.
Ooh.
So in the book, there is the first and only black residents of Stepford, Royal and Ruth Ann. And they are not included in the 2004 one either. That plotline has changed into Roger and Jerry. And while I think it was likely chosen to change that because it was 2004, like the cultural moment of talking about LGBTQ plus rights, et cetera. But that's also like clearly we know that the issue of racism, I personally have felt would have, I didn't want to see that tackled certainly by either of these adaptations, but I did find it interesting that there is a very clear point made about the whiteness of Stepford in the book that seems to be completely left out of both film adaptations.
Mm-hmm. That's I wasn't aware of that. I think that the fact that there is a black family moving to Stepford is in one, like it's mentioned in the 70s movie,
yeah.
But you then that's okay, that makes more sense to me because it's like then you never meet those characters,
right?
That sucks. I mean, it's not, I mean, obviously Ira Levin is probably not the most qualified person to be leading that discussion, but the fact that there were black characters and obviously like the extreme whiteness of the Connecticut suburbs, it's like there is more than enough opportunity to have a productive discussion there if either of these movies were actually hiring black creators that could speak to it, which neither did. That's so frustrating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, and again, it's like, yeah, they tried to change it into shining a light on homophobia instead of shining a light upon racism. But it really didn't even have that much to say about homophobia, to be quite honest. It was just like, oh, let's just randomly include a gay couple. Okay, you know.
And in fact, it just does a homophobic thing where the movie suggests that, like, kind of reinforces this problematic notion that in a gay couple, there's still, like, one person's the man and the other person is the wife.
Definitely.
And because, like, Roger is kind of, like, foisted into this, like, Stepford wife role because he gets the treatment, he gets changed, his husband I forget his name
Jerry
like wants him to like tone down his just like
be more conservative
and like he wants him to kind of assimilate into this straight heteronormative Stepford lifestyle.
This made my head hurt because it was like the way that Roger was treated. First of all, he's played by Roger Bart, who is a straight actor who has played a number of iconic, very stereotypical gay roles. He also played, I don't remember the name of the character, but the guy from The Producers.
Oh, yeah.
The gay character in The Producers, that's also Roger Bart. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm sure that there's a wide variety of opinions, but it seems that Roger Bart is very commonly cast to play a stereotypical gay character. He is not a gay actor. So there's some shit going on there. And the fact that there's just like Roger, as he's written in the movie, is like a very stereotyped character.
Definitely.
And then it's sometimes the person making the point of like at, when he's post Stepforded and now he's a gay Republican, then the person who makes the point of like, wow, this character was really stereotyped, are the people you're supposed to be angry at. Like, there's that moment where Walter is kind of gaslighting Joanna because Joanna's like, Roger's different. Like, they got to Roger. And he's like, well, what do you mean? You know, it's a, don't stereotype him, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, It was just so weird. Like, the flaming hoops.
It was mind-boggling.
An interesting thing that I read, reading about the differences between book and movie, and this is from a blog called Beyond the Front Cover, it seems like one commentary that is made in the book, and again, I haven't read it, so this is just this blog's take on it, is that Ruth Ann, the black woman who has moved to Stepford, thinks that the wives are being cold to her, not because they have turned into robots, but because she is black. So she believes that the reason they are so antisocial is because she's black, not because they are robots, which I don't know how, I would be very curious to see how that's written into the book. Again, summary from a blog I literally just Googled. But, you know, that seems like it's more than just a cursory, like, oh, let's just randomly include a non-white couple, let's include a non-straight couple, etc. It seems like maybe there was a little bit of thought put into it, but again, have to read the book. Got to do my homework.
It seems like, I mean, it's like yeah, again, we're not a book reading podcast here, but it does seem like Ira Levin has a good track record as a writer of including social issues thoughtfully. And it's so telling that that was just in both 1975 and 2004, like
not included.
We're just gonna skip that.
I don't know. It's really hard to watch movies with, and let's be real, so many, like, look at the Golden Globes or the Oscars. It's all white nominees. Mm. But it's like watching these films that, you know, whiteness is such a large part of the oppressive suburb conformity. And that is just a whole chunk of it completely left out.
Right.
Which is frustrating because the setup of this story is uniquely suited to comment on like oppressive whiteness. You're in a fucking rich Connecticut suburb. Like, where is a better place to kind of make those points? Which is where I feel like it, you know, even when both of these movies are making the occasional like feminist point, it's still very centered in upwardly mobile white women the way that you know most movies tend to be when they get this far. Like, it's just really, it's I kept writing down like, this is the perfect setting to address mm-hmm. like this topic, so much and more. They just don't even try. Like, yeah.
Jordan Peele said that he was largely inspired by this property, by the like Stepford Wives kind of premise mm-hmm. in Get Out. And I feel like, you know, that's obviously a movie that like does.
I see that.
Yeah, because there are some pretty interesting similarities between, you know, Stepford Wives and Get Out.
I mean, the creepiness of conformity. And I love watching Stepford Wives as someone who, like, I definitely, as someone who sells sex toys for a living, am a, you know, I have an unusual career. But when I was a teenager, all I wanted to do was fit in and be normal. I just wanted to wear Uggs and a North Face and be normal. And... you know, and then I became a little alternative later on. But I think that's such the beauty of it is I think so many of us are either aware of or are trying to fit in, or we are aware of how painfully we don't fit in. And there's so much to explore with this mm-hmm. concept. It's a wonderful premise. I would love to see further adaptations. And I know that there were some like 80s and 90s spin-off, like the Stepford Children, the Stepford Husbands that were like TV series, I think. TBD on like what is or is not explored there. I'm not going right. to hold my hopes high, but it's I think it has stood the test of time, or, you know, at least 40, 50 years, because mm-hmm. there's so many universal themes of otherness, of perfection being something impossible to attain as a human, yet we try to do that anyway. Mm-hmm. And also just having that be something that's synonymous with a very narrow way of living your life.
Yeah.
And conformity, even in the way you make your home. You know, that's mm-hmm. there's a lot there.
Well, while these movies don't tackle, well, the one thing that they do is very lightly mention how Bobby Markowitz is Jewish in a community that is largely probably like Protestant Christian. And the 2004 movie more than so in the 1975 version, Bobby introduces herself to Joanna as Barbie Marco and then says something like, it's like the upwardly mobile version of Markowitz. So she's basically like Christianizing her name.
Yeah, interesting. I missed that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then in with Bette Midler in the 2004 version, there's that whole scene where they're like talking about like the Christmas collectibles book at their book club, and she's making a bunch of jokes about how she's like unapologetically Jewish, and then all of the other women are like, well, you can make a menorah out of pine cones, and like they're just like not getting it. Yeah. But that's really all the movies do as far as like commenting on any kind of diversity yeah. or lack thereof.
It's like one mention, right. one joke, and then it yeah. never kind of comes back.
Right.
I also yeah. thought it was kind of, I mean, it was at least, even if, you know, we've talked a lot about like the level of effectiveness, but I think that it's possible one of the reasons that this story endures as well is it kind of like is, I don't know. I feel like gender, like expectations of gender, even though they change over time and they've become fortunately far less binary over time and there's a larger discussion being had, but there is kind of like this, I don't know, like historical tendency of like that you see like different versions of the same theme popping up in the 70s and the 2000s of yeah. at least, I mean, in the US. And then I think generally, I'm not a historian. I don't know if I'm a comedian, so throw an egg at my head if I'm wrong. But like a tendency of when society is like kind of at a quote unquote low, there's a recession, there's a war going on, women and marginalized people in general get more power because it's like, oh, we all need to band together. And then when there's times of kind of excess and economic growth, the binary kind of creeps back mm-hmm. in a pretty insidious way. And it's like you see that in like World War II years, and then in the 50s when there's this big economic boom, all of a sudden women are back in the house. And you mm-hmm. see it again in the 80s, and then, you know, in the 90s and 2000s, the economy's in a slightly better place, and you see these like stories about, you know, just domesticity and like expectations for women kind of come back. And as much as like, I think we've like moved certainly in the right direction over the years, it's like almost depressing to be like, oh, I understand why these two movie, like I understand why this movie would make a comeback in the early to mid 2000s. It seems like a time where those like pressures were kind of making a return.
I mean, even just like with Black History Month, we're now in Women's History Month. And as like, as long as you need a, you know, History Month for it's, you know, as long as that is something, it means that, yep, there's still a power imbalance and shit is still fucked up if, you know, we're going to just emphasize this one marginalized group during a certain period of time, you know, there's a lot.
And with the 2000s, it's like the movie does reflect that women have more power than they did in the mid 70s. But the you know, reaction from the patriarchy is worse. And they're like, you know, taking, going to even further extremes. And they're like, you know, threatened to a greater extent than like, my wife wants to take a picture on her Nikon.
Yeah.
Should I kill her? Like,
yeah, that makes it a lot more, it's a difficult pill to swallow that there was like really, I mean, again, not that being a CEO means you deserve to be turned into a robot, but no, at least we're like, oh, he was feeling emasculated and had to set the record straight versus like, ah, my wife who already was a pretty much a housewife, I'm going to make into even more of a housewife.
Right.
Well, I imagine that part of it was that Joanna in the 75 version mentions that she was dabbling in women's lib when she was living in New York. And it seems like a lot of the women in the community were into women's lib before they were murdered and turned into robots.
Yeah.
Because there are mentions of different women either leading or participating in like a woman's group in Stepford.
Right.
And their husbands were clearly threatened by that, hence turning them into robots, because a lot of men do not like women having freedom and autonomy.
Yep.
I made a list. Classic me, I made a little chart.
Powerless. Ooh. Love it.
Yay.
Some of these we've already touched on, but I wanted to just kind of go through the differences between the 2004 and 1975 versions of the movies. Just kind of reiterating that Joanna in the 2004 one keeps trying to like assimilate and adopt the Stepford Wives lifestyle, even before there's any indication that, oh, did she or didn't she get like actually converted? But she keeps being like, no, I am going to wear pink and I am going to bake a million cupcakes and I'm going to do, like, she's like trying to assimilate.
Power of positive thinking.
Right. For question mark reasons. We're never quite sure why. Part of this is also that she expresses no interest in trying to return to her career or do professional work of any kind. There's no like, well, maybe the TV thing wasn't actually for me, but I'd like to pick up this other thing. There's just like absolutely no. Whereas in the 1975 version, which I feel like is more realistic or at least more consistent with the character that Joanna has been established to be, that she does continue to pursue her like career ambitions and her passion for photography. She and Bobby try to start like a women's group to help liberate the women of the community.
Loved that. And I really, one of the scenes that stuck out to me about the 1975 one, I really do. I love Frank Oz. I love the production design on the 2004 one, but the 70s one is like, I don't know. I just like it so much better. Yeah. The scene in, I also like that Joanna almost cheats on her husband in the first one too, even though it kind of goes nowhere. And they make it seem like it's Raymond Chandler, but that also it was confusing. But
yeah,
the scene in the first one where she is talking with the gallery owner, she's trying to like, she's really nervous, she's feeling really insecure about her work. He's kind of like, even though he's like, I like your work, he's kind of dismissing her as like being hysterical to an extent. But she like says really clearly this thing that it was like, oh my God, like it just, she says like, I just don't want to be forgotten. Like I want my, like she just wants her life to have meant something beyond being someone's mom and someone's wife, which is like, you don't get that moment for like that updated moment for Nicole Kidman, Joanna. And I feel like you could really use it, and it could have like made an interesting statement on the time period it was coming out.
Definitely.
And then, yeah, just like a large chunk of the movie is Joanna and Bobby like going around to the different women in the community being like, hey, we're forming this women's liberation group, basically, like a place where we can bond with each other and speak freely about, you know, our issues and concerns. But it ends up fizzling out because the women who join only want to talk about cleaning and baking, because unbeknownst to them, these women are actually robots. But like, they put so much more effort. Basically, this whole list is like reasons why the 1975 version of this movie is better.
Yeah.
But like, they actually like put in effort, and like, Joanna is a more consistent character throughout. Another thing we touched on, but like, Walter gets a redemption arc for no reason, and like, is the one to like liberate the wives and save the day. Whereas in the 1975 one, like, Walter becomes abusive, and it's clear that he's bad, and he is.
And then that one, she gets to hit him in the head with a fire poker, and that's fun.
Yes. And then that kind of connects to like, the main villain in the 2004 one is this woman who wants to punish all women because her husband cheated on her with a younger woman. Whereas the main villain in the 1975 one is the Men's Association, aka the patriarchy, which makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
Let's see. I think we've gone over everything else pretty in depth.
I have some notes from the 75 one that I'm looking at my notes on each movie, and the notes I took on the 1975 one just like just make more sense. It feels like I'm like looking at like a more complete like piece of work here, because it was like more subtle imagery. The whole thing is a little bit more subtle, but like, one thing that really stood out to me is right when they move into the new house, Walter in the 75 one, he is just like, oh, what if we had, have you ever had sex in front of a fireplace? Oh, like, what if, like, let's christen every room in the house. And like, there's this really big theme of like, I view you as a sexual object, and that is in line with me basically wanting to turn you into a human sex doll that is living and breathing. And, you know, again, as a sex toy salesperson, I think the idea of sex dolls is definitely something that just kept popping up in my brain. How a Stepford Wife is like the, you know, I'm not saying that people who buy and use sex dolls are looking for anything remotely like a Stepford experience, but I think it raises questions in the average person that are much similar. It's like, oh, well, you know, why would you want a full-size doll? Like, what does it say about how you feel about women if you want this doll? Another thing I noticed in the 75 one is that the things that qualify as accidents seem very mundane. Like, there's a scene where there's like that fender bender in the parking lot in the 75 one, and they're like, oh, call the ambulance, and you just get the sense that like, nothing bad ever happens here. Like, like the most delicate issue is a 911 call, which I think, you know, that's the suburbs. And then finally, a line I wrote down from the 75 one, and I believe this is Joanna talking to Bobby earlier on when they're kind of like trying to figure out what's going on. Joanna says, it's perfect. How could you not like it? But I don't like it.
Uh-huh.
And I love that line because she's like not able to put her finger on what's creepy about it and recognizing like, yes, this is idyllic. And like, I know I'm supposed to want this. Why don't I want this?
Right.
I just thought it was a very telling line that was really well written. And I don't know if that was directly out of the book or whoever adapted the script wrote that, but I thought that was a beautiful line that is kind of the pinnacle of the creepiness of suburbia.
I totally agree. Yeah, there's just there's just so many elements in the 75 one that just felt more thoughtful and like subtle in a different, and it's like, well, you know, the Frank Oz movie is not trying to be subtle, that's not its mission, but I just thought it worked well. And I wish something that I think could have carried over into the 2004 adaptation but didn't was the fact that like Joanna and Bobby are like really good friends in the 70s one. You like understand, like you get to see them kind of form this bond. They're very much on the same page. They're very complimentary to each other. They're like rooting for each other. They're kind of each other's main source of like, you know, just feeling like maintaining reality.
Yeah.
And it's, and so I feel like in the 70s version, when Bobby turns and she's Stepforded, you really feel it, and you're like you can feel how devastating this would be for Joanna. But when it's funny when Bette Midler turns, but you just don't have that same level of relationship. They're kind of never on the same page because Nicole Kidman can't keep her, you know,
she's
keep
too
a decision
inconsistent
for more than 2 seconds. So they don't really get that bond because they're never really on the same page. I don't know. Was there any other stuff we wanted to cover?
Does it pass the Bechdel test?
Both
movies do.
They do. Yeah. They do.
And I think even with our new caveat of meaningful conversations that do not mention men, I think it happens much more in the 70s one, but it does happen in both.
Yeah, right. Definitely.
Yes.
I will say that, and I said this earlier on when we were talking about it, it's like funny to put the Bechdel test to a movie where there is like this, you know, even if you are talking to a robot about cooking and cleaning, it's like, well, their brain is being controlled by a man. So are you really talking to, you know, so it's like, that's a fun little caveat to throw in there.
Sure, sure. Well, and then there's plenty of conversations between two women who have not been yet turned into robots.
Yeah.
About it's mostly about, do you think we'll be robots soon? I don't know. But in the 70s when they talk about like Joanna's career ambitions, they talk about like, hey, I was a women's libber. Like there's like a lot of shit going on. Like you get good, they talk about their kids. They talk about like, a lot of good stuff. Oh, I guess that was my, like, I guess the way that the kids are treated, and that I think they just should have written the kids out of the 2004
there shouldn't be
one.
I mean,
or
even in the 70s when the kids kind of also disappear a little bit.
True.
I feel like it was like kind of telling, I think that there is this like, I can't describe, but like there is this impulse, Caitlin, I feel like maybe we've talked about this before, where if your female lead is a mother, she has to be like a really good mother, and it has to be pointed out by the story. Like I think that that's something that kind of happens a lot. I don't know what it is. It's not necessarily bad, but it's just if you're listening to this and you're like, that makes sense to me, I feel like I've read about this somewhere before, where
no,
if
that
you're,
makes sense.
Yeah, it's like pointing out that like not only is she our hero, she's an amazing, flawless mother. Yeah. Like,
because that's how the patriarchy sees women.
Right.
You're a mother or you're a daughter or you're a sister or you're a lover.
But never all at once.
Madonna whore complex for sure.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And then I guess it's goes without saying, unfortunately, that both of these movies were written and directed by men.
Yes. Why is this?
I honestly think this is a story that could be adapted well again.
Definitely.
By people who would have any insight into what this could feel like.
Truly. Yeah. I guess that brings us to our nipple scale, which is our scale of 0 to 5 nipples based on how the movie fares looking at it through an intersectional feminist lens. I think I have to like give two different scores for the two different movies.
Definitely.
Here. While I appreciate that both movies attempt to comment on the kind of rigidity of women's expected roles in society under like what the patriarchy expects of women, and how that's like a very interesting thing that is extremely ripe for discussion for our show, especially the 75 version, while it's not perfect, and there's some, you know, things that it leaves out, and it is, both movies are very much like these white families ignoring any kind of what a black family's experience would be, or any family of color's experience would be, living in a predominantly white suburb. So yeah, there's things that it could have handled better, but for the 75 one, I want to give it like a, maybe even like a 3.
Yeah, it's hard. I was trying to think what I'd give it. I don't know.
I think like a 3 or 3.5, especially for like a movie, like kind of adjusted for like time inflation, since it's like a 1975 movie. I think it has a lot of really interesting points to make, and just it handles like the satire and the allegory and the tone of it all way more effectively. Whereas the 2004 version, I think I would only give like a 1.5 or maybe a 2. Like, I think there are, again, the examination of like male fragility and like the fragile male egos of like all the husbands who couldn't live up to their wives and who felt threatened and emasculated by them. That's a real thing that happens, and that's worth, you know, examining. But again, the movie is just like, well, but, you know, the patriarchy isn't actually to blame. You know who's to blame? Glenn Close.
Yeah, I am never like a big fan of that decision. It works for me in the 2004 one because I'm like, well, this, you know, all the other points failed, so I guess yeah. This one should at least fail in a way that is funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm going to go 3.5 on the 70s one and 1.5 on the 2004 one for mainly the reasons described. I'm just a big fan of the 70s one. I almost want to rate it a little higher.
Yeah.
I think for its time, especially, you know, it's kind of like that rare one where it's like a movie written and directed by a man, adapted by a book written by a man about women. That somehow didn't end up being deeply condescending and horrible to women.
Mm-hmm. Our bar, again, is set so low. I mean,
it's like,
I give the new one a half nipple, and I give the 70s one like 1.5 nipples, because while it's addressing like the women's rights aspect, it's just like there's so many. I think if I read about what was left out, that really just rocks my my judgment of that as well. The fact that it was written into the book and then, you know, seemingly intentionally left out or maybe edited out, who knows? But I'm a generous reviewer, so I've been trying to like batten down the hatches and be a tougher reviewer these days. I think it's worth mentioning that on Letterboxd, which I am an avid user of, the 70s one has like an average rating of 3.5 stars, and the 2004 has an average rating of 2.5 stars. So it's a full star less. Yeah. So okay. The average viewer would agree that the 70s one is overall.
The Rotten Tomatoes score for the 2004 movie, the critic score is 26% on Rotten Tomatoes. So rotten.
That.
And only a 30% for the audience score. So audiences also don't like this movie.
Yeah, I don't think people liked this. I think that like we
nostalgia for us, maybe.
Yeah, nostalgia and like I liked sleepovers.
I liked drive-in movie theaters.
The best thing about the Frank Oz one for me is like the set design. It's so cool and so like gorgeous and like dated in kind of ways that are appealing to me.
I agree.
So I think like, yeah, the set design is way better in the new one. It's really expensive looking. And it had a ridiculous budget. It had like a $90 million budget.
Oh my God.
And made only about that much at the box office. Profit turner.
Turns out, generally, you know, it's women do like movies that are promised to be about them to actually be about them and not this bizarro Matthew Broderick redemption arc.
Ugh,
how many many times am I going to have to watch a Matthew Broderick redemption arc? I also read that the set of the 2004 movie was really tense and no one liked each other.
Yeah.
Like, which is kind of fun.
I read that too.
Oh yeah. My God. Juicy.
And ooh. Frank Oz was kind of throwing shade. He's like, oh, well, I wish Bette Midler wasn't bringing her problems onto the set.
Oh my
I was like,
God.
Okay, sir. Okay. There's... who knows? Who knows? But it seems like no one liked each other, and Matthew Broderick has also badmouthed the movie. No one enjoyed it.
Oh, I did not know that. Hmm.
I know, right? It kind of made me a little more attached to it. I'm like, oh, well, so this was hell for you as well as me watching it now.
Yeah, chaos on and off screen.
Yeah.
Oh, truly.
Zoe, thank you so much for joining us to talk about
it. Genuinely, thank you so much for having me. I loved getting to do this deep dive and really like think critically about the films I watch instead of just like, oh God, I've been watching so many movies that taking notes intentionally on them was really a nice change of pace for me. Thank you.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. This has been what a wild journey this property has been through over the years.
I feel like I've been turned into a robot and then turned back. Zoe, where can people check out your stuff, follow you online, etc.?
Great question. I am Thongria on social media, so the word thong with R-I-A after it. My sex toy store is Shop Spectrum Boutique on Instagram. And a new thing that a journey I've been embarking upon lately, which may appeal to some of you listeners, is a disturbing movie Discord, which I've been calling the effed up movie heads thread. So if you want to join that Discord, please feel free. We'd love to have you talk about some weird movies that disturb us.
Nice. We'll link to it. Oh, you can follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram at BechdelCast. You can subscribe to our Patreon, aka Matreon. It's $5 a month. It gets you access to 2 bonus episodes every month, plus the entire back catalog, which is up to nearly 80 bonus episodes now.
Woo.
Wow.
It's out of control.
It is. I would say check out the 1975 Stepford Wives if you've never seen
it. It's free on YouTube.
And and also give Get Out another watch.
Yeah.
Just for the hell of it.
Yeah, definitely.
Skip the Frank Oz one. I had to pay $3 to watch it and I'm never going to get over it.
I'm so sorry.
Ridiculous. You can check out our merch at teepublic.com/thebechdelcast. You can get masks, you can get stuff, you can live your life or not, we won't know.
True.
And on that note, I'm gonna go down to my basement and just pull my head off.
Oh yeah, I'm gonna figure out how to get an ATM and I'm gonna get a cash system set up in my stomach.
Just bit up 21s. Yeah.
So, I'm a feminist icon, so I'm gonna find a man robot and I'm gonna make him do all my bidding for me.
Wow. Love it.
I'm gonna go tell my boyfriend to pick up the groceries at Costco, just like the end of the actual 2004 movie. I'm gonna go say, hey, go get all my groceries for me. You're a man and it's time for that. Tables to turn.
Things are a little different these days. I know. I'm like, that's what a shitty punishment. I'm like, oh, the grocery store rocks. It's fun.
Yeah, come on. We all love it.
Anyway.
See you next time.
Bye.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.
Let's clear out winter and clean up the lawn with Spring Black Friday savings at the Home Depot. Right now, get the Ryobi One Plus Leaf Blower for just $89 and make your lawn work easier with a powerful 90 miles an hour of clearing power.
And with convenient online shopping, you can order on the app, pick up in store, and get outside sooner. Get your yard spring ready with the Ryobi One Plus leaf blower. Now just $89 during Spring Black Friday at the Home Depot. How doers get more done.
There's nothing worse than wearing clothes that don't fit right. That's why Tomboy X makes size and gender-inclusive underwear, swimwear, and loungewear for all bodies. Queer-founded and run for over 10 years, you can trust they know a thing or two about making the perfect pair. Feel comfortable in your own skin. Shop online today and use code IHEART for 20% off your first purchase. Only at TomboyX.com. Tomboy X. Fit for you just as you are.